Hey folks, I'm Dr. Amy Perlman. I'm a urologist and I'm coming at you from the AUA in Washington, D.C.
And I'm coming at you too.
Here's Dr. Larry Lipschultz and we have Dr. Dolores Lamb here with us today.
The famous Dr. Lamb.
Say hello to the crew.
Hi, crew.
So you two way back.
Yeah.
You two go way back.
I mean, unbelievably far back. So I had somebody running my lab named Roy Smith. Fantastic, fantastic PhD, who then decided to go into industry. And at which point, Dory, who was at Baylor working with Roy, assumed the role of our lab director. And the rest is history.
Yeah.
So she stayed with me together. We were for 25 years.
Wow.
Right? Everybody keeps telling me how old I am at this meeting. I can't take it.
Okay.
Dory keeps reminding me. She does.
I know his birthday.
What does it take to run a world-class infertility lab?
Well, so first of all, you have to be a high-complexity laboratory director because this is regulated under federal law by CLIA. And so you have to be certified. I also chair the certifying board for laboratory directors.
But you didn't certify yourself.
No, I didn't, but I do now. Yeah. I mean, I chair the board now. And so you need to be certified, but I think really what you need to do is have a very in-depth knowledge of andrology. And when I say andrology, it's all male reproductive health. Mm-hmm. And it's important that that you not only know the biology, but you have to know the pathology.
But see, the unique thing about Dory is her understanding of clinical reproductive issues. So she not only came at it from the standpoint of running a first-class lab, but she knew what we needed, and she was innovative in introducing things that would help us clinically.
Right. So we've developed clinical diagnostic tests for several different areas of male infertility diagnostics. And, you know, of course, the cornerstone of the male infertility evaluation is the semen analysis. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that's very important. It gives us a lot of information about testicular function, the patency of the male genital tract emission.
And now we know it's a metric of men's health.
Yes.
So that's really important.
Yes. And when Larry says it's a metric of men's health, what we know is that men who are infertile in general have an increased risk of a variety of different conditions, including cancer. They have a twofold increased risk. As their sperm count goes down, it goes up tremendously higher. And this is because there's a common link between both male infertility, meiosis, as well as mitosis in the testis. But that's why they have a mutator phenotype making mistake in their DNA. So the testis does a good job of stopping those cells from creating a sperm, but somatic cells don't do as well when they have these types of mutator phenotypes.
What are some things that people need to know when it comes to producing a sample that then a lab like ones that you've run would look at? Because you mentioned at the Innovation in Men's Health session yesterday that, like, what's the biggest issue that men don't do right when they're producing a sample?
Oh, I could write a book. So we always gave very detailed instructions to the patients in advance so that they knew exactly the requirements because they need a very specific abstinence period that can be between 2 and 7 days. And then they also need to understand about the collection cup, right? Which is, in a sense, just a simple cup. Mm-hmm. But if they spill or miss parts.
I have a problem with guys in this concept of missing. I don't know where it comes from, but not only do they miss the cup quite frequently, they miss a toilet. You cannot imagine what goes on in a men's restroom. Seriously.
Tell us.
It's all over the place.
Yeah.
The toilet's this big and it's on the floor and it's on
do
the
seat.
Do we
have unfair expectations? Like maybe a simple collection cup? Is the cup too small to allow for the collection?
But listen, let's face it. They can get it in the vagina. They can't get it in the toilet. Right?
That's true.
It's true.
Yes.
Like, what's the issue?
I have to think that maybe they're nervous, you know, and they're under pressure.
But how about if it's at home?
Well, so we actually advised against collection at home, right? Whenever possible. I mean, some people have religious things, reasons why they can't collect in the clinic, but really the ideal place is to collect in the clinic, in spite of the fact that it's rather sterile.
So how does that impact mail-ins, the current trend of sending your semen analysis through the postal service?
Right.
And they're collecting it at home.
So that's a big problem for male and semen analysis, or even these ones where they were using cameras, right? Companies have devices using your iPhone. But the point is that collection problems are actually far more common than you might expect. And then no one tells, right? And we actually had a form that patients had to sign after collection that they didn't have a problem with the collection. But when you're doing a male and semen analysis, first of all, they're supposed to collect late in the afternoon for the last FedEx pickup. But sometimes, they have to be at work. So they collect first thing in the morning, sometimes even the night before. And so all of that is tremendously impactful for doing the semen analysis. And, you know, it's this, the ejaculate is not homogeneous. And so there's different packets of sperm and seminal fluids, right, that come out sort of sequentially. So, in particular, if you miss the first part of the ejaculate, you've lost a lot of the sperm, right? And then you might think the man had low sperm count when he really just had problems collecting.
But you've had concerns about the back calculation of the motility.
Yes.
And about, you know, handling the sample in the mail.
Yes.
And sitting someplace and...
Right. So what happens is that, of course, FedEx kicks up the package, and they do have sometimes temperature monitors, depends on the company. And but, you know, FedEx, I got information from the shippers, right? And FedEx told me how long usually it takes for the package to be picked up. It's in a hot truck or a cold truck. That they don't have heat or cooling in the FedEx trucks or UPS. And then, you know, it goes to a collection area where they sort the packages for further shipment. And then that's air conditioned or heated again, right? So it's temperature extremes. Then it goes to the airport usually, where, again, it could sit on the tarmac for hours and hours exposed to the temperature changes. And then the same thing happens when it's being delivered, right? So it's a lot of temperature changes. But what happens is that because the medias are not ideal that are being used for the sample to extend it, right? Instead, the sperm are dying. So there's what they call a linear decline in the count, but it's not on a per patient basis. So some men's viability plummets immediately after, you know, 6 or 10 hours after ejaculation. Other men, you know, with poor semen parameters might do pretty well the whole way along.
So that's no way to know that,
yeah,
you know, prospectively.
So do you think any of these at-home tests play a role in screening?
So I think that they're good for men who want to get a sense of what their
sperm count is. And the wives, I can tell you, the wives love the at-home collections that go to your phone so they can show them.
Well, yes.
I mean, I think that
you've had a couple
of
patients recently come in who used the Yokit.
And the wives were so proud of that. Oh, look, that's my husband's sperm. I mean, I thought it was really cute.
Well, how did you find it useful in your clinic?
I mean, I use it.
It brought them in, right?
Yes.
It brought the
guys
in.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, and I think that's the role of these at-home testing is to get the patient involved, interested early, and then get them into the doctor. I mean, you're not going to get cured at home collecting a semen sample. Mm.
Yeah, I do think that it's useful in rural areas where men have no option. You know, there are states who have absolutely no urologists or one or two urologists, and they're not certainly specialty trained, right? They're going to be taking care of all types of urologic problems. So I think that there's a need for this, even for the fertility preservation, but the samples are poor, and many men who are about to get chemotherapy, for example, have poor semen parameters because of their illness. So, you know, you're starting out perhaps with not a lot of sperm.
And I think there's a big problem with patient education, because if the patient's told, look, you're going to start chemotherapy. Yes, you're living in a small town, but this is your only chance in the future to ever have a child.
Right.
Travel, get your sperm banked. Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. I just don't think they're being told. They don't realize that if they mail it in, it may not. And who knows whose sample they're banking?
Oh, I know that.
10 years later, you go to get it out and it has your name on it. And is it yours? I mean, I think it's scary.
Yeah.
I would advise all patients to travel for banking. Don't mail for banking.
But we always had a very strict chain of custody and documentation of every single person that, you know, that the sample passed by them. And I think that that's very important. And again, that's lost with the mail-in semen, you know, bank it.
Yeah. So Dr. Lamb, let me ask you this. What currently excites you in your field?
Oh, I have to think about this. So I think there's a lot of emerging technologies that are really going to revolutionize how we evaluate the infertile male. I'm one of the authors of the World Health Organization manual for the examination and processing of human semen, but we did not talk about anything genetic there except for sperm aneuploidy, which is a test that we developed, which is now used internationally. And when men have aneuploid sperm, they have a very high incidence of pregnancy loss, and these even with normal semen parameters.
Do you think, and this is going back to but the test that you developed, was it patented?
No.
Why?
Well, because it's standard technologies used
but it's
for
the way you used it, though.
Well, the secret truly is, yeah, getting the sperm head to deep.
I know.
Yeah, so we didn't.
We could have made some money, and we never made any money on it. Yeah, but the other thing is when you're talking about the genetics and the aneuploidy, I don't think people pay enough attention to that. Especially in the IVF world?
Yes. So in the IVF world, you know, there's a sense that any sperm found is a healthy sperm. And we know actually that it is not. And especially for aneuploidy, these men may have normal semen parameters, but and they can get their wife pregnant. But then there's pregnancy loss. And of course, this is very traumatic for couples. But, you know, we had a patient years ago who had gone through 6 cycles of IVF, and then finally he was sent to see Dr. Lifschultz for a clinical evaluation after 6 cycles, and he had hugely high sperm aneuploidy. So we measure 5 chromosomes out of the
whole... In the sperm.
In the sperm, but out of the whole collection of chromosomes there, because these are the 5 chromosomes which, if they're aneuploid, are consistent with a viable but affected birth.
Like 21, 15, 18.
Right. And, you know, but all the other chromosomes, if you have an extra copy, a missing copy, it's going to be lethal for the offspring or the fetus. And, but the problem is the patient was furious because here he has this hugely high rate of aneuploidy, a global problem, right, in meiosis. And he said, why did I just spend $160,000 on repeated cycles?
From the poor wife.
Yes.
Going through egg retrievals. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you something. Yeah. It's close to $1,000 right now to do fluorescent in situ hybridization, which is the technique to look at the sperm. Mm-hmm. Don't you think there could be, with all our new technology, a cheaper way to look at it? Less expensive way.
Yeah.
And then when you come up with it, we can patent it and we can get well. Right?
So, yeah.
Can you do that? Come on.
Well, I mean, I could certainly help to do that. I think that some of the technologies that our colleague at Alumacell is working on is a very positive advance.
But it's expensive, isn't it?
No, it's actually very cheap.
Like how much?
The cost of the equipment to do it is only like $500 for them.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Of course, all the AI and everything that's helping with the analysis of the data. It's costly to build.
Yes.
But, you know, but that's built, right? But my point is that I think that, you know, the really high price is because of the cost of the fluorescent probes, and it's used for amniocentesis.
But can those costs come down? Are there ways to lower that cost?
So I think there's probably other dyes that could be used,
right,
or that, you know, that people could put their own, you know,
fluorescent dyes. Can you pick up aneuploidy on whole genome sequencing? Or does it have to be the sperm?
It has to be the sperm because the men have a normal somatic.
Can you get the DNA out? Can you get the chromosomes out of the sperm to look at? Or can you lyse the heads? Is there any way to do that?
Well, so we do lyse the heads, but I suppose...
I don't want to put you on the spot.
No, this
is an assignment. You can go back, back to Kansas and call me next week.
It's Missouri.
Missouri.
Kansas City is divided.
Next week, I will just call me and we'll get things rolling. What do you think?
I think it sounds great.
But I don't know that doing the whole genome sequencing would be as informative, right? Because every sperm actually has some of them had different complements of aneuploidies.
How many did we look at when we did it on a patient? How many sperm were necessary for aneuploidy evaluation?
We went down, we even did testis biopsies, if you remember.
But how about just in a semen sample, how many sperm do you have to look at? 200?
Well, we used to count thousands, right? Because we had an automated system that would take 8 planes of focus on every single sperm. And
this is all the stuff she did.
A microlocator.
We don't do it anymore.
Yeah, well, that's a shame.
I know.
A microlocator where I could go back and check any sperm, right? But it essentially puts the images of every sperm that's normal into one file, one box. And then the ones that are abnormal, then the technician manually determines whether or not it's truly aneuploid or whether it's debris or two sperm over each other. But the point is that we would count thousands of sperm because it would automatically count.
I got to put this in my phone because I just had an idea about the flow cytometer.
I'll remind you.
Okay.
So what's your take home message?
That I think that probably in 10 to 15 years from now, the routine semen analysis will be more of a quick look at the semen under the microscope, and that much of the diagnosis will be genetic because we know that a large percent of these men have genetic problems that are affecting not only how many sperm they're making, but also the morphology and the proper chromosomal complements within the cells.
But do you think it could be epigenetic because of all the environmental toxins that we're talking about and now measuring? Because that can't affect the genetics, but it can affect the epigenetics.
So interestingly, you can tell a man's age by looking at his sperm at the epigenetic profile. And as men age, they get more epigenetic modifications. But there has no function been shown for these epigenetic marks. So you can have marks that inhibit gene expression, and you can have marks that do absolutely nothing. Yeah. And so there's no way, and so far, no one has identified any of these epigenetic marks in the offspring.
Yeah.
So whether they have a function or not remains to be shown.
I don't want anybody checking mine.
Okay.
My age remains a mystery.
Well, actually, they can pinpoint it quite accurately during that.
I know that.
What, his age or the epigenetics?
But I'd have to donate a sample. Happening.
We could do that,
Larry. No, we're not going to do that.
Stay tuned for AUA 2027.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad this podcast could get you two.
I know.
Back
we
together
have, we
again.
Never get a chance to talk.
Yeah.
Well, seriously.
Not about work. Yeah.
Not about
work.
Gossip. We can gossip.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for coming.